From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, 75 years ago, Texas saw the deadliest school disaster in American history, the explosion at the New London School, March 18, 1937.
The world was shocked. Hundreds of families bereaved as the result of this terrible catastrophe. A schoolhouse, packed with innocent girls and boys, in a flash became a smoldering tomb. A headline of never-ending sorrow.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. The estimated death toll from the New London School explosion varies from 296 to 319. It's impossible to know the exact number due to the chaos of the Depression era. New London, which is in Rusk County, at the time was filled with transient oil field workers, and school records were destroyed in the blast. Approximately 600 students and 40 teachers were in the building at the time. Only about 130 escaped without serious injury.
That I thought we had been bombed.
Here's Bill Thompson telling his story to KHOU-TV Houston for a 1987 news story.
I have had a lot of people in the years past say, well, I guess you don't remember much about it, you know, but I remember as much about it today as I did the day it happened.
Thompson was in the sixth grade at the New London School. It was 3:15 when he and his classmates were counting down the minutes for the last bell to ring. It was a sunny Thursday afternoon. Spring fever was in the air, which aggravated all the more since the next day school was to be canceled so the students could participate in a day of academic and athletic competition at a neighboring town. But then there was a spark and a massive explosion.
It just happened instantly, and everything went up and seemed like I was in a whirlwind, and it all settled down, and that's the last I remember. I was buried under debris and the ceiling that had fell in on top of us, and I could hear people working when I came to, and I was trapped and I was squeezed, and I could only move one hand, and I feel on my head and my I could feel the blood and grime. I didn't know what it was. I thought I was having a nightmare. I kept pinching myself, trying to wake up, and I couldn't wake up. And I heard people digging and hollering, here's someone, let's get him.
The explosion was heard for 10 miles. Parents looked up to see what had happened, and then there was the absolute terror in realizing it was the school that had somehow blown up. Ralph Carr was one of the parents who saw the explosion. He told his story to KHOU-TV.
Something I never had seen before. It looked like it went up a little, fell down. Everything went down. From then on, there's too much dust, much I got to the building all right, got in, and found my daughter, but I couldn't get to her. It's too much. So I came out, and I run back to see my wife was standing there on the hill, and told her that our girl was gone.
He recognized her clothes, how he recognized her. You know, she was slumped over in her desk.
Those children were sitting in the seats, and evidently it was a shock. Just like that, they didn't know what happened.
I'll tell you, it was the worst disaster, I guess, that's ever happened.
The elementary school students were dismissed from school at 3 o'clock. Most of them, like Molly Ward, were able to avoid the direct discharge of the explosion. She was sitting on a street corner waiting for the bus when the detonation came.
Mothers were going up and down the highway trying to stop vehicles to see if they had seen their child. Was she alive or was he alive? The part that stands out in my mind so strong is the screaming and crying that was going on that we could hear echoing from over here at the school for the next, that afternoon and during the night. It was just so tragic.
The tragedy of the New London School explosion remains today the worst disaster ever to strike an American school. The cause of the explosion was a buildup of natural gas in the school. 3 months earlier, the school board canceled the contract with the United Gas Company to save $300 a month. The school district, which due to the oil boom was considered the richest in the nation, had a plumber tap into a residue gas line of a local oil company to get free natural gas. The gas line connection was faulty and leaked. In the days following the explosion, parents wanted answers. Over 70 lawsuits were filed. They were all dismissed. No school officials were found liable. However, the school superintendent, who also lost a child in the explosion, was forced to resign. This weekend in New London, survivors of the explosion will gather at the school grounds in front of a 30-foot granite monument to remember March 18, 1937, and the lives lost that day. Again, survivor Bill Thompson.
I had exchanged seats. I had moved one seat forward and I traded seats that day because I wanted to sit behind a little girl that I call my girlfriend, you know. And by making that trade, my life was spared. And the girl that traded with me lost her life. She was sitting in the seat that I was supposed to be in. And then I carried a lot of remorse and a lot of guilt from that. I was 12 years old then. I carried a lot of guilt with me for a long time and wondered why, you know.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. You can see videos of the New London School explosion on our website. We've posted the 1937 Universal Newsreel and the 1987 KHOU-TV Special Report. The story of the New London explosion and its aftermath is told in a new book called Gone at 317. David M. Brown is co-author of the book.
To understand how big the disaster was, you need to back up just a little bit and consider how big the school was. It was in an oil boom area, a big new school they had built to accommodate all these children pouring in from all across the United States. It was 250 feet long and two stories high, built on an embankment, so it was sort of a split-level school. But it was a big modern school, state-of-the-art. It had a 250-foot-long crawl space that was about 4 feet deep that ran the entire length of the school. And that space had filled up with natural gas because of a leak in the pipes. The explosion was the equivalent of 70 pounds of dynamite being strapped under each square foot of that building when it went off. That just leveled the entire structure.
My name's John Burr, and I'm in the 10th grade in London High School. And there were 150 of us in that class. I was in English room when this happened, and Miss Lizzie Thompson was teaching us, and we were studying the life of Edgar Allan Poe, and all of a sudden something went boom, and the roof fell in, and the back end of the building, our floor fell out. And the blackboard killed Miss Thompson, and there were about 22 in the room, and five of us got out. And nobody would have thought it of this big building falling down. It was accumulated gas in the basement, they said, and it just looked like somebody lifted the lid off a kettle.
After the explosion, the most common expression you heard was the school was just gone. There were students all around the school, younger students, when their older brothers and sisters in the junior high and senior high went sky high.
This is during the Depression, 1937. It's also during the East Texas oil boom era. Humble Oil was the big player in that area, and that's where the natural gas came from.
That's where the natural gas came from. It was the Great Depression hit in 29. This great oil boom hit in 30. So it was East Texas became a mecca for everyone looking for a job from anywhere in the United States. And that's why they had so many thousands of workers come in, and they needed schools. The area had been a quiet little farming community before they struck oil. And when the boom came in, it became a kind of a different culture altogether, an oil field culture combined with the farming culture. And the natural gas that was in the school that day was natural gas that had been refined out of oil at a little refinery near the school and was being piped away back out to the oil fields to be burned in oil field flares. It was called waste gas. Kind of an early phase of our society learning to use natural gas. They hadn't even come to the realization that they needed to put an odor in it, because natural gas is essentially odorless, and especially if you don't know what to smell for, you won't smell it. As this school basement filled up with natural gas, some of the students and teachers realized that their eyes were kind of stinging, and they were getting headaches, but they couldn't relate it to a natural gas leak, and no one could smell it. So after this explosion that killed more than 300 students and teachers, they made a law in Texas, and then state after state adopted the same law that anyone who used natural gas commercially or piped it into buildings or homes or schools had to add a malodorant to it. So today, our homes are much safer, our schools are much safer, our buildings, because of this particular disaster.
Over 300 students and teachers killed in the explosion in this one town, New London, small town in East Texas, the Piney Woods, near Tyler, near Palestine, Rusk. What do the people refer to it, and when they talk about it colloquially, what do they term this event?
That's an interesting thing. For many decades after the explosion, the community, New London and much of the community of East Texas, Henderson, Longview, Tyler, they stopped talking about it. It was such a devastating, shocking thing to happen, to have your school children just blown literally to bits. Most of the bodies were not even recovered, just bits and pieces and clothing. They just were so traumatized, they stopped talking about it. And if people came to the community years later wanting to say, to find out what had happened, they would just be met with silence. Just, you know, we don't really like to talk about that. I ran into a little bit of that when I first started researching it 25 years ago, living in East Texas. Some people were reticent. They still didn't want to talk about it. Little by little, I gained some trust. I started doing some interviews. Before it was over, I was able to talk to more than 100 of the survivors and rescue workers and people who had been affected by the disaster. And the story is a narrative history built on their stories and told like a novel of sorts, but it's all scholarly done and documented with endnotes so that all the facts are there. The first definitive book done on this subject.
And they don't have a word, they just don't even talk about it in New London?
The explosion is it. You can say the explosion in Henderson, and they know you're talking about the New London explosion.
And this wiped out a generation.
Certainly did. It wiped out a generation of people, and many, it was a setback for the boom. Many of the workers who were there just picked up and left. They didn't want to be close to where this had happened. Took many generations of soul searching and recovering for some of the children who were involved to ever come to talk about it. And the last few ones who are remaining today are going to meet on Sunday and have a little service and a remembrance of their friends they lost and their teachers they lost. And for anyone in Texas or anywhere who hasn't been, it is a very reverent spiritual event that it's worth going to one of these days.
The explosion happened at 3:17 p.m., and it's interesting that in this early era of mass communication, that it was around half an hour later that it first moved on the AP wire coming out of Dallas. They had gotten word that it had happened.
It took some time to get out. The communications were a little slower then.
That's still pretty good, even for today's day and age, if there's something like that happens.
Yes, it was. They had telephone. They had telegraph. And it was pretty good. Someone picked up the phone and called a wire service, and the communications started getting out. Of course, you didn't have any TV specials going right away on it, but then, as the book talks about, eventually there was a young, energetic radio entrepreneur who on site actually did a nonstop broadcast that was picked up nationally. And I think it's probably the first of its kind. I don't know another example of a national radio broadcast that went live for 36 hours like that one did, the broadcast done by Mr. Ted Hudson.
Does that a recording of that exist now?
No recordings, not even a snippet of it exists.
There was another young, energetic reporter dispatched from Dallas to cover this, Walter Cronkite.
We saw this great pile of debris. That's all it was. You couldn't have identified it as a building. It looked like a pile of debris that might have been bulldozed together into that little area. And hundreds of men looking like ants digging into that rubble, taking stone by stone away, trying to reach, in many cases, their own children. As we got closer, we found that they were tears were smearing their dirty, rough-hewn faces as they were bloodied hands were picking up these pieces piece by piece and eventually finding a body and lifting it out.
Walter Cronkite was in Dallas. He was based full-time in Kansas City Bureau of United Press, and they were sort of switching out some vacation hours, and he had gone over to Dallas to fill in for a reporter and was on the desk in the afternoon when the call came in to United Press where he was working. And he and the United Press bureau chief left in a car and went immediately to New London. Now, Cronkite was 22. He was a pretty rookie reporter. This would be the first huge story he ever worked on, and a story that even late in life he would call the most tragic story involving mostly children outside of anything that he covered in war, which is incomparable to other disasters.
And there were newsreels that showed up. We have a record of that.
There are newsreels. There were several newsreel crews that got to the scene while the rescue and recovery operation was still underway. There's some pretty good footage that happened.
Hundreds of school children and their teachers, killed and mangled, some of them literally blown to bits, others crushed by falling masonry. When their new consolidated grade and high school in the center of the rich East Texas oil field was shattered by a terrific gas explosion. Had the blast occurred 10 minutes later, school would have been dismissed, and the death toll small, perhaps. But it struck when only the lower grades and a few others had left, catching almost the entire student body in an inferno of flying debris and falling walls. There was no warning. Before the eyes of persons in the vicinity, including scores of parents assembled for a meeting in a nearby building, the schoolhouse, one of the finest rural structures in the country, suddenly burst asunder and collapsed. There's scarcely a home in the entire school district untouched by the disaster. A disaster caused, it is believed, by gas pockets, which had collected in the school's sub-basement. the long list of American catastrophes, this is one of the worst. The entire nation bows in grief.
I don't know of anything in my life other than maybe 9/11 that has been that shocking when you first realize the full scope of this disaster with so many little children that just had no chance.
News spread quickly once it began to be reported about the magnitude of this disaster and the tragic loss of human life, especially these children. Even Adolf Hitler relayed his condolences.
He sent a telegram the next day. Hitler sent a telegram. The chief of states of all the world powers sent telegrams. They came from Russia, from France, from Germany, from all over the world, and of course all the states sent messages to the governor of Texas and the school officials, you know, wishing them well and offering all sorts of help. And you imagine a 250-foot-long school. That's a big pile of rubble. There were 700 students in the building when it exploded. We know that about 300 were killed instantly. There were children throughout the debris that had to be saved. So that this rescue work had to be done carefully. They couldn't just drive a bulldozer over it. They used the drag lines to lift some of the heavier boulders. But mostly they used just pure back strength. Arms and shoulders, and baskets, peach baskets that they filled with debris and handed back man to man and emptied and then passed forward again.
It's a story of tragedy, but it's also a story of people coming together and dealing with tragedy and overcoming it and persevering.
That was the reason to write it. Two reasons for me. One is that I felt that these children and teachers should be remembered. You know, we do remembrances, human beings do remembrances for tragedies that we think had a strong impact on us as a society, and this one certainly did. It's been forgotten for some reason, a little bit hidden in history, but their lives certainly showed us the way in how to make schools safer and how to handle natural gas and other natural resources more carefully.
Were those questions asked after the explosion other than, well, we need to put a foul smell in natural gas to be able to detect it? I mean, did someone, when they made the decision to use this cheap natural gas at the time to heat the school to save money, did anyone ever say, that this is a bad decision, we shouldn't do this?
Not on record. There's no record of anyone saying that. The school board minutes of that meeting where that decision was made were lost in the explosion. But there's no record of the officials saying, oh, this might be hazardous. There's pretty good anecdotal evidence that, you know, it was risky. Nature of an oil field is dangerous. That people are used to oil field fires that come from sudden explosions at well site, all sorts of disastrous things, and perhaps in a way that kind of inoculated them to thinking that, you know, it was all around us and we seemed to get by. The particular problem here, I think, was more ignorant of how to use natural gas safely, and if not ignorance, a degree of indifference. If we need to get this done, we've got a lot of children to keep warm, and this is a way to do it, and just not taking the time to thoroughly research what can happen under certain conditions with certain substances. The Texas legislature passed a law, an engineering law, not long after that, that would have prevented the school from doing what it did. By this, even though it was not legal for them to tap into the waste gas, but it was not illegal. The refinery couldn't sell it and couldn't even give it away, but it could turn its head, as refineries everywhere did, and let local communities tap into it and burn it. It was just, you know, I mean, it just seemed logical. Don't let this stuff waste. We can use it. But the law that the legislature passed was that no connection into a pipeline like that could be done by anyone other than a certified engineer. And so the school would have then violated a law having its own janitors and makeshift plumbers build a connection into that hazardous gas. But that's how many laws have come to be made, is in the aftermath of tragedies that we don't think through.
Did they build a new school on that same site?
Same site, just a little back from where the original school stood. Actually, same building, almost same type building. It's shaped like a giant letter E, built with a yellow brick and red tile roof, and it looks very similar to it. Kind of eerie going into the building, and when you know what the old school was like. The monument is called a cenotaph. That's Greek for empty tomb. And that was chosen because so many of the victims literally were not recovered in the way that we like to recover lost loved ones, you know, and know that this is a person who was with us and now they're gone and in a coffin. Many parents had to make do with just a remnant of clothing and, you know, and a pile of flesh.
So when they have the commemoration of this terrible event in New London, what do you think that'll be like?
Well, I've been to them before. They've been, the ones that I've been to in the past are in that the school that replaced the school that exploded. It's kind of eerie at first, especially to the survivors. They still come. They're diminishing in numbers, but they...
They would be in their 80s.
They're in their 80s and 90s. They cheer up. They sing some old spirituals together. They're very solemn and spiritual during this moment and talk of their old friends. It's just like a high school reunion, except it's a very solemn one where they lost so many friends. And they know that they've been combined through their lives by this great explosion. Then they usually walk around the grounds, some on walkers, some on crutches, some with the aids of, you know, oxygen tanks to help them breathe. And they reminisce.
David M. Brown is co-author of Gone at 317, The Untold Story of the Worst School Disaster in American History. It's published by Potomac Books. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm Yvette Benavides. David Martin Davies produces Texas Matters. You can write to us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org. And you can subscribe to the free podcast on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.